Doom do 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 do. Hi, plant people. Welcome to episode 42 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Hi, plant friends. I hope you have all had an awesomely planty 2 weeks and that you enjoy the Maria's Favorite Things episode. It's been so fun hearing from you guys and hearing what products that you really liked or what you're getting for your friends or for yourself this holiday season. So I hope you enjoyed that. And even more importantly, I'm so excited to be bringing you a new episode today all about how to make your very own moss poles for your plants. So I am so excited to share this tutorial with you because personally, it has just really benefited me and my plants to have learned how to make these moss poles. And it's so simple once you know how to do it, and I figured that I just needed to share this idea with you. So I became inspired to make my own moss poles for my plants after watching a plant friend of mine, Tyler, from the Instagram account Your Local Plant Boy, make an Instagram TV video tutorial on how he makes his moss poles. After I saw it and I saw how simple the whole process was, I kind of started looking at my Monstera cutting that I got last year that has grown like crazy. It was like a tiny little cutting, 4 leaves that's now like 15 leaves. And my new Raphidophora tetrasperma cutting that also is already growing new leaves. And I decided, you know what? I think I want to try to make some poles for myself because I realized that I actually had all the materials I needed already in my apartment. The process was so easy, and I hope that this tutorial, or maybe even if you go to Tyler's Instagram and watch his Instagram TV tutorial, inspire you to maybe make a moss pole for your plant collection. Because when you think about it, these plants, especially these climbing plants, they were designed in nature to climb up trees and climb in nature with these aerial roots that don't even really become developed when they're house plants. And if we can do anything as plant parents to help replicate the natural environment that these plants are supposed to be living in, we should. And it's really fun. And I do have to say that the poles look like wild and natural. And I have 3 of them right now. And I just really enjoy the way they look. I think they give the plant like an extra level of urban jungle vibe, if you know what I mean. So our guest today, Tyler Rogers, is the founder of Arium Botanicals, and he's the botanical bro behind the Instagram account Your Local Plant Boy. So the cool thing about this interview is 2 months ago when we did this interview, Arium Botanicals was Tyler's online shop for rare and interesting plants. He was always selling out. He specializes in rare and unusual plants. But since me and Tyler have done our interview, Tyler actually opened the doors to his brick and mortar plant and coffee shop, Arium Botanicals and Intent, in Portland, Oregon, in October. How cool is that? So it's actually Oregon's first specialty coffee bar and plant shop, and they sell unusual and rare plants and specialty coffee and tea and handmade ceramics. And he opened it with his very sweet partner, Tony, and they're just such a powerhouse couple. I love it. A fun little interesting fact about the name that they chose for their shop. It's actually Arium Botanicals X Intent. Arium Botanicals is what Tyler is the head of, which is obviously the rare and interesting plants. And then Intent is the specialty coffee and tea shop that Tony heads up. And Tyler told me that they chose the X in the middle because with a plant, if there's a hybrid of a plant, they'll put that X in between the two names to show that it's a hybrid. And so they wanted to do that with the name of their shop. So it's the Hybrid Coffee Plant Shop. And I just think that's the coolest. So we're so lucky to have Tyler walk us through this easy and fun DIY project for all of you. I hope it helps your plant collections continue to bloom and grow. Before we dive into the tutorial, I have a very exciting announcement to make. This month is sponsored by Modern Sprout. So, plant friends, if you have listened to this podcast or followed me on Instagram, it's probably no secret that I am completely obsessed with Modern Sprout's indoor grow lights. I've been using them in my apartment since last February, and I can't tell you how much joy that they've brought me and how much they've helped my plants over the last 10 or so months. So I have their grow bar installed in my bookshelf, which makes for the ultimate plant shelfie because it's turned an entire bookshelf into a highlight space for plants. and I have their grow house installed in my very low light kitchen. The lights are full spectrum LED lights. They have these really nifty timers where you kind of just set them and forget them, and the lights are a beautiful bright white light. They look like any other light in my apartment. So we all know I love Modern Sprouts grow lights, but what we might not know is that Modern Sprout has an entire line of hydroponic grow kits, which are awesome. And I am currently growing their garden jars of organic basil, sage, and mint in my grow house in my kitchen. All of their kits are self-watering, what's called passive hydroponic setups. So that means that there are no pumps or plugs involved, no fuss, no muss, super easy to set up. I love that they have a real variety of styles of their actual kits. So depending on whatever your apartment or home aesthetic is, there really is a kit that would fit beautifully into that vibe. From super sleek and modern to the really funky rustic mason jars that I have in my apartment in the grow house, which are awesome and ironically actually match this handmade pineapple wallpaper I made. But that's another story for another day. In addition to the variety of the actual styles of the kits, they have a beautiful variety of organic non-GMO herbs that would pair great with whatever you're cooking or maybe whatever cocktails you're making over the winter. And they also have an awesome, really innovative line of flowering plants from pansies to daisies or even lavender, all that you can grow indoors. How cool is that? So plant friends, these kits and lights from Modern Sprout would be a great addition to your urban jungle, but they would also make for the perfect holiday gift for so many people. The plant person, the chef that likes to harvest their own herbs to cook with, the college student who needs a little green to help de-stress from school. They would make a great stocking stuffer, a great hostess gift, really a great anything. Because who doesn't like growing things and watching things bloom? I mean, come on. Or if you want to get real crazy, you could pair some of the grow kits with a grow light and set anyone up for growing success. So if you're interested, Modern Sprout is offering Bloom and Grow listeners 15% off of your next purchase with the code BLOOM. Now, I have had coupon codes with Modern Sprout for 10% off before, but they've wanted to offer you guys 15% for this month. So if you're interested, head on over to modernsprout.com to check out all of the different grow kits and grow lights that they have to offer us, and don't forget to use the code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off. Okay, who's ready to learn how to make some moss poles? Here's Tyler. You hear that slurping, plant friends? That is me on my dregs of my daily dose of greens, courtesy of today's sponsor, Equilibria. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. I always have loved green juice and greens powders. Obviously, I love plants. I love growing plants. I love eating plants. Plants are good for you. And I have tried most greens powders brands on the market, honestly, at this point. I have to say, I'm really loving the Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens. I might argue it's probably one of the best tasting greens powders I've ever had, and that says a lot because I've tried most of them. The Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend, along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. There's no way I'm eating 35 fruits and vegetables throughout the day, but I love that I'm getting little doses and the micronutrients that are in each of the different veggies and fruits, right? Plus, they're certified organic, which I love. A lot of the competitors are not. I just mix one scoop of the greens powder into my water every day, and I'm shocked at how delicious this powder tastes. It's kind of like apple juice. I started back on the greens powder bandwagon because this spring, in this like season of rejuvenation, I'm kind of rejuvenating, doing an overhaul of my health. I've returned to my workout routine. I'm getting in more sleep. I've recommitted to my morning practice, and I've made this Equilibria Nutri-Greens part of that morning practice, drinking the powder in water in the morning. Plus, I love a female-founded company, right? Don't we all? If you want to try this greens powder, Equilibria is hooking you up with 15% off. Head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM for 15% off Equilibria's daily Nutri-Greens and so many other different products on their website. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. Thank you so much for coming on Bloom and Grow Radio today.
Thanks. I'm very excited to be chatting today.
I'm so excited because I feel like I'm a bit of a fangirl with you these days because of the IGTV video you did on moss poles. It was so helpful. And I have to say that my plants are really loving the moss poles that I made. I got a very small cutting of a monstera from one of Summer Rain Oaks' plant swaps that's like grown into a huge plant that's needed support. And I was like,
oh, sweet.
I was tying it onto chopsticks that were like toppling over because the plant's obviously getting big. Then I also just got a Raphidophora tetrasperma, hashtag so hot right now, from a lovely listener, Bethany, that she told me that they like to climb up things too. So it was like perfect. I had just gotten that plant and then your IGTV video went live and I was like, this is the perfect topic to talk about.
This came just in time.
Just in time. The universe, the things aligned in the universe. So before we dive into your awesome tutorial that has already helped me so much, I'd love to know just a little bit about you and who you are as a plant person and how you kind of came to be this Instagram botanical bro, you know, CEO of Arium Botanicals.
Yeah, definitely. Plants definitely started off as like a hobby for me. And I think what really accelerated it was finding aroids as like a whole instead of kind of just like houseplants. My focus definitely is in aroids. And kind of like once you get into it and start learning about like where philodendrons come from and like Raphidophora and Epipremnums, things like that, there's a lot to be learned. So I kind of just dove right in and started working with plants.
Did you, have you always had a green thumb growing up? Or like when did you start getting into the aroids?
Yeah. So like my grandparents and like parents had always had some type of garden. So I was always somewhat around them. But as far as like houseplants go, I was in college and we had a dorm that was like just completely stark. So I had like went to like, you know, the corner store and picked up a succulent. And that's kind of when I started to research about them because I had no clue what plant I had just bought.
Mm-hmm. I can relate.
So then it like after hours of like going through the internet loopholes of trying to figure out what this succulent was, I had figured it out. And I thought it was really rewarding to find out just the name of it and kind of like where it comes from and like what are the proper ways to care for it. So then like after that, I kind of just fueled this whole cycle of buying these plants that I thought were interesting, but it was also equally as interesting for me to research them and like know where they came from and what were their like specific requirements.
I love that. That's so important too, because it's not just about buying the plant and having it look pretty. Like the more you can understand where the plant comes from, the more it's going to thrive, right? I feel like that's a huge part of becoming a plant person.
Definitely. And like, that's always something that I try to suggest when people ask like what plants I would recommend for them. Mm-hmm. I always tell them to research their plant that they're interested in to really try and match those specific growing conditions where they come from.
Totally. And understand what conditions you have in your apartment.
Yeah,
what plants are conducive to that. Because if you have, you know, a low light apartment, there are only a few plants that are going to thrive in there unless you start supplementing with grow lights.
Right, exactly. So kind of just like understanding the fundamentals of the plant that you're interested in really will boost your enthusiasm for plants, I think.
Totally, yeah. Oh my gosh, I totally agree. And where did Arium Botanicals come from? When did you make that transition and kind of start a plant-based business?
Yeah, so that started kind of around a year ago, actually. And I was managing a coffee shop back home in Valparaiso, Indiana. Mm-hmm. And I like really wanted to continue working with plants because previously I was at IU Bloomington,
okay,
Indiana University. And they had just like the most beautiful greenhouse. And so like in between classes, after class, I was always at the greenhouse.
Really?
Yeah. Like so often so that like people were mistaking me for a worker there.
Oh my gosh.
I thought that was kind of cool. So then when I came back home and I was working at the coffee shop, I like definitely felt this lack of plants in my life. So I kind of just started, I started working with one of my friends who owned a store, and I was like, hey, like, can I like bring in some plants here and see how they do? Cause I was also making terrariums at the time. And so I kind of just like mixed those two terrariums and houseplants together, and they like took off at the shop that my friend had. And so I was like, hey, like, this is really something that Valparaiso is lacking, is interesting plants, other than ones that you would find at big box stores, you know? Right. So then I kind of just was like, well, I think I'm going to try and do this like as much as I can prior to working, you know, full-time job at the coffee shop. So, actually the owner of the coffee shop sat me down and he like walked me through getting a business license, the wholesale, everything like that. So that connection there was super helpful to kind of help me get started with Arium.
That's so cool. And now you're no longer in Indiana, right?
Yeah, no, just about 2 months ago. Yeah, I moved over to Portland now. So I'm out here in Oregon.
Portland, Oregon. Cool. With all the cool plant shops out there.
Yeah, there's tons of cool plant shops and a ton of wonderful plant people, too. Mm-hmm. It's been great to meet them in person.
Plant friends in real life. I love that. And also, now you're not only just going to be a plant person in Oregon, you are going to have your own shop in Oregon. How freaking cool is that?
Thank you. Thank you. I'm really excited about it. It's kind of like the exact space that I had envisioned for Arium. It's just it's like just this big industrial, small, big industrial space.
That's amazing.
It's filled with like natural light. It's just beautiful in there.
Oh my God. Congrats. And you, from at least what I've noticed in your online store, you tend to carry like more rare plants. Like you're not really selling like pothos or like snake plants on your site. Like you have, is your shop going to be more like aeroid rare based, or will it be a mix?
Yeah, no. So especially with kind of having a smaller studio space, it's definitely going to be focused on more of the, like the rare and unusual plants, because I don't really have the space to kind of carry everything that people might want. So it's definitely going to be very specific to the unusuals.
That's so cool. And I feel like in a place like Oregon, which already has a lot of plant shops, that's like a perfect way to differentiate yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really excited. I'm working with one of my friends who has a greenhouse, Corey. He like just has a beautiful greenhouse. And so it's really fun to kind of like see the whole process from growing these plants and then to also like spread them to people.
Wow, that's amazing. And speaking of spreading to people, I'm just so excited to kind of dive into something that I feel like it seems that you have, I guess since you have a lot of aeroids which climb, you're going to have a lot of moss poles, but it seems like you employ these moss poles a lot in a lot of your plants. So I guess maybe when was the first time that you decided to make one and why? Maybe we can dive into why specific types of plants need something to climb.
Yeah, yeah. So the first time that I had ever made them, I had like tried making them on my own before, probably around like 3 or 4 years ago. And I like did not have much luck because I didn't really know how to go about doing so. And so then I had worked at Sprout Home in Chicago for a while. They're all amazing. It was a great time working there.
I've heard great things about them.
And so one of my like projects that Stephen had me work on when I was there was making a moss pole for one of their larger monsteras there. And so we kind of like sat down and we figured out like what exactly do we need to start this process. And so that's what I did for like one day is I just made a whole bunch of like really large moss poles for that monstera.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that was my first time about like 3 or 4 years ago. Since then, I've kind of like refined how I'm doing them.
And what plants are best suited for moss poles?
There's quite a few, actually. So really, a lot of the aeroids are vines, and they're going to want to grow up something. So if you think about like their natural habitat, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of them will grow in tropical areas. So they'll start off as an immature plant on the ground and they'll kind of creep along the forest floor until they find a host, which would be like a tree, a larger branch or anything like that. And so you'll see like, I'm sure you've seen the like aerial roots or like the nodes. Mm-hmm. In the jungle setting, it's super humid and it's a lot different than our home, right? So typically in humid settings, those nodes will actually continue to stretch out in search of humidity in the air, moisture, and they also want to kind of just trail down into the soil. So like our monsteras, they all want to climb up the deliciosa, the adansonii. Those all would be able to, those would benefit from a moss pole. Same thing with our, like our pothos, all the epipremnums want to climb up something. Same things with the syndapsis.
What's syndapsis?
Yeah. So like the, silver satin pothos.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Those would also really enjoy climbing. Cool thing about those actually is those are actually, a shingling plant. So if we were to have it on a vine, those leaves would actually lay really close to the moss pole and kind of like layer up on top of each other. I think that's something really interesting that not too many people know when they're growing them, because they typically let them kind of trail down.
Right. Yeah, you're mentioning a lot of plants that I feel like are known to kind of be in like hanging baskets or like climbing down a bookshelf or something.
Yeah, yeah. And if you notice them, like when you, if you grow near the top of the pot, you'll see how they have kind of larger leaves. And then as they trail down, you'll see how they kind of start to get a little bit smaller. You may not even notice it until you pull like the end of the vine in comparison with the top of the plant, right?
Right.
They're actually kind of starting to immature. They'll kind of go down in leaf size because they're not attached to anything. So they look really cool in like hanging baskets, but ideally they'll want to grow up something as well.
Okay, so anything that, or maybe not anything, but if we're used to seeing something in a trailing basket, maybe think about training it to climb up something, and then a lot of aroids. Also, do we have like a definition for what an aroid is?
An aroid basically is a group of plants, any group of plants that produces an inflorescence.
Exactly. It's all about that inflorescence, which is essentially the flower of the plant. But a lot of these aroids climb. And we actually later this month are going to have a two-part episode on Aroid 101 with the founder of NSC Tropicals. So why don't we just wait for that episode to dive into aroids? Because what I'm really excited about is diving into this moss pole tutorial 101 with you. So why don't we dive into the actual tutorial first, and then we'll do some troubleshooting questions at the end. Sound good?
Yeah, that sounds great.
All right. Walk me through.
Definitely. So before I even like start my moss poles, I always like try to make sure I have all of the materials at hand. Because mm-hmm. Once you start the process, you'll kind of want to keep going because you'll see that ideally three hands would be best when making them. So the materials that I use for my moss poles is just those like thin bamboo stakes. And you can get those at just like any garden center. A lot of times those bamboo stakes are used just to like stake things up or mm-hmm. prop things up. So they're usually really straight and they're lightweight too, which is the best, I think. And they actually, they're really long lasting too. So they won't kind of like break down in like moist conditions, like in a pot.
Okay.
Yeah. The like clear nylon string, you can use like fishing wire, fishing line, anything like that. I use the clear nylon because it doesn't really stretch. So you can really like wrap it around the moss pole when we're making them. Mm-hmm. And it'll kind of hold everything in place because it's not stretching. So then it won't be loose. And it doesn't break easily.
Yeah, I went to the hardware store. They didn't have fishing line, but they had like clear hanging wire.
Yeah.
And that's what I got, and it worked like a charm.
Sweet. Yeah, mm-hmm. I like using that too, because then you don't really even see the ties that you make.
Right, exactly.
And then the most important, the sphagnum moss. The cool thing about sphagnum moss is that it's actually like a sterile material. So people have asked before, like, won't I get pests if I have this like kind of like moisture block,
right?
You know, all around my house. But it's sterile. So like fungus gnats and things like that aren't really drawn to it because they want more of a rich organic material.
Okay.
Yeah.
And where do you get your sphagnum moss from?
You can get them, like, I found them at Home Depot before. Most larger garden centers have them.
Mm-hmm.
So like you can usually find them in the garden center of most places.
Yeah, I found, I'll leave it in our show notes, but I ordered all the stuff on Amazon Prime too. I'm such a New York City girl. I order everything on Amazon Prime. But yeah, you can find some pretty good moss online as well.
That's really good to know, actually. Mm-hmm. I make moss poles and never leave my house.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to my life.
more time with the plants.
Exactly. So sphagnum moss, clear line with no stretch, and a bamboo stake. My other question about the stake, is there any materials that you would suggest shying away from? Because I would imagine like raw wood or something that is going to get damp might rot eventually, right?
Right, right. I know a lot of places will use, like greenhouses are totally fine when they use like cedar stakes, because those actually don't rot out. But like those like plywood stakes and things like that, you'll kind of want to stay clear from, because they'll rot at the base. And so then over time, you'll kind of just have a stick that'll fall out of the pot because the base just totally rotted out.
Got it. So stick to cedar and bamboo. And I actually used, I had a metal tomato stand that like I had to assemble myself, which had a bunch of, I would say like foot long metal little skinny pipes, and I actually used and it seems to be fine. The metal didn't seem to be like glazed or anything, so I'm gonna see how that works. I know, I don't know if it'll rust.
That's what I was thinking. I don't know if that would like potentially affect the soil over time or not, but
I'll report that. Interesting question too. It was for my tomatoes, so I figured like whatever they make the steak out of for a tomato what are they called? Like cage should like water resistant, because it's going to be outdoors in the rain anyway. So I'll report back to you.
Yeah, I'm sure that actually probably would work fine too then.
So you get all your materials and you've laid them out beautifully, just like your IGTV video. And then
thank you. So really then you have all the materials there. It gets pretty messy. Okay. So I'll lay out like newspaper or make sure I'm on a plate, like a table that I can wipe down afterward. Mm-hmm. And then once I get my station set up, I will get the bowl of water and kind of start to hydrate the sphagnum moss, because you'll see them when you order them, how they come in like those like blocks.
Yeah. Like dehydrated blocks.
Yeah. And they're really dry. So you'll want to make sure you kind of fully saturate the moss before you work with it.
Okay.
And then, so before I start, I'll take my stake and kind of measure how high my pot is, right? Because it's going to be end up going into a pot with your plant. Mm-hmm. So you'll want to make sure that the moss line, the level where it starts, is kind of even with the soil line or just below the top inch of soil. So
with the moss pole, so say I have a 6-inch pot. So that 6-inch pot is probably also like 6-ish inches deep. And so what you're saying is it shouldn't be moss all the way from the bottom of the pot to the top, even though the stake is going into the bottom of the pot. You're going to want to go like, if the soil is 4 inches deep, you're going to want to kind of measure right to the top of where the soil is, and that's kind of where you start the sphagnum, or maybe just a little bit under, but it shouldn't be sphagnum going all the way down, like buried in soil.
Right, right, exactly. Because ideally, you'll want the stake kind of reaching down to the bottom to kind of help anchor everything, but the nodes and everything aren't into the soil, so it doesn't make sense to kind of have a full moss stake.
Perfect. Okay. So then once you've kind of measured that out and figured out exactly where that sweet spot of like the top of the soil and the beginning of the moss section of the pole should start, what do you do with the nylon?
So I'll take my nylon string and then I'll just tie a very simple knot, but then I'll leave about 6 inches of extra string, because we'll actually end up tying once we're done with the moss pole, tying it back down.
Okay.
So then kind of once you're there, you just kind of go at it. So you don't have to work with like super wet sphagnum moss, because it's already been soaking, right? So I basically squeeze all the water out of it, because it'll still be somewhat moist. So I'll drain the sphagnum and then I'll basically just squeeze it around that bamboo stake, and then I'll start wrapping it with that nylon. One trick that I've learned is to twist the pole instead of your string, because that's going to prevent your string from getting tangled within your bamboo pole.
Right. So instead of holding the stake and moving your arm over and around the pole, holding the nylon and twisting the stake.
Because of that, depending on how big you're making the moss pole, can get pretty tall. And so it's going to be kind of hard to move your hand over a tall pole consistently.
That was a tip I really appreciated when I was making my own. And I found it's great to work with the sphagnum when it's damp. And I feel like the trick is to just like wrap it around as tightly as you can. And then the twine, I mean, the rope is actually what's like tightening it and giving it its shape. So just like focus on that rope. Why am I calling it rope? The line. Focus on the line. Like, don't stress about getting the sphagnum in the perfect shape before the line. Really just like get the sphagnum kind of in place and then work the line to kind of secure it to the pole.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like I do not really mind like the shape that it's taking once I'm starting, because like you said, it's going to kind of shape it with that twine as you're working your way up. Mm-hmm. One thing that I found also works is the sphagnum kind of holds its shape once you squeeze it, right? Mm-hmm. So basically, as I'm working up, I will squeeze the moss pole once I kind of have the foundation, kind of just squeeze it into the like cylinder shape that I want, mm-hmm. and just take that clear nylon and go over that just so you kind of have that extra support there.
Totally. Okay, cool.
So then I kind of just keep making my way up. This is where I was saying like it helps if you have a third hand mm-hmm. to kind of like squeeze out the sphagnum and then put it onto the pole, because the way that I was making there, Tony will help me and I'll have the pole in one hand, the clear twine, and then he'll put the moss there and I'll just kind of wrap that and then he'll prepare the next like handful of sphagnum.
Yes, so. You and Tony, Tony is your sweet boyfriend, but you and Tony, you guys made it look very effortless in your video. And then I made them like late night by myself one night, and I did not look as effortless in my kitchen as you guys did together. So if you have an extra set, I did it great. My poles look great, but it wasn't as graceful as the two of you. So if you have a partner, it definitely helps, I think.
Yeah, I've been telling some friends too, like have a like planting party and get some friends around so they can help you and you can help them make their moss poles. Mm-hmm. It's a win-win because then everyone will leave with some moss poles.
Oh my God, I love that. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results. Now we've effortlessly put all the moss up the pole, secured it all the way up, and now we're at the top of the pole with the moss. What next?
Yeah. So then we reached all the way at the top. So now with that nylon, you're going to keep working your way actually down. I just spiraled it all the way down to kind of like pick up any loose ends of the sphagnum that might be hanging out. Wrap that in, and then with that extra twine, or excuse me, the extra clear nylon that we left at the beginning, mm-hmm. just snip your snip the nylon now and then wrap that together. So tie a really tight knot to kind of like finish it together so it all is holding.
And I will say, just from doing this, this was the most fun and fulfilling part, because that's when you get to kind of use the twine to really catch like whatever else is sticking out. Like, I feel like it's the way down, not the way up, but the way down, when you really actually like hone in whatever the shape of the pole is going to be.
Yeah, that's definitely like my favorite part too.
Right? It feels really good. I don't know why, but it feels really good. And then do you have any recommended, for me, I feel like I just had a little bit of trial and error of like the perfect angle to which wrap the twine up and down. So I would say when I was doing it, maybe I was doing it on like a 45, maybe 45 to 60 degree angle. Like, is there a certain angle you found that's like a sweet spot?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. So what I do actually, what I found works best for me, is I'll actually kind of make an X as I'm doing it. So I'll wrap one way up, but then I'll kind of follow through and go back down to kind of like hold that one section in place.
Got it. So it's even. And
yeah. So I'll just make X's kind of going all the way up the moss pole as I'm wrapping it.
So kind of making all the one side of the X on the way up and then crisscrossing it on the way back down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then you fasten it at the bottom and you have your moss pole. For anyone who wants to like maybe see a visual, head over to Tyler's Instagram TV and have a look at Your Local Plant Boy. But it's your, not Y-O-U-R.
Yes. I wish I could change that now to be a little bit more grammatically correct, but I feel
late.
Like that
You're
name,
too famous.
Yeah, it's settled now, so there's no going back.
I love that. So now let's talk about, so we make this amazing pole. It's beautifully kind of still damp. And
yeah.
What are the best practices for getting it in the pot and actually attaching your plant to it?
Yeah. So, I have actually have never just kind of like used an existing, potted plant and like stuck it in there. I always will find plants that kind of need to be, repotted anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I can start from the beginning.
Okay.
So one thing that you'll kind of want to take note is when you have either your terracotta or whatever pot that you're going to use, you don't want to put the pole directly in the center because it's going to end up going through the drainage hole.
Yeah.
So
that's a good tip.
So kind of figure out if you want your plant to grow on like just one side, because if it's going to be facing like in a hopefully a brightly lit corner,
mm-hmm.
If it's going to be kind of just viewed in one side, you can put that moss pole all the way near the back of the pot and you can have it kind of just growing up on one side. But if you want it to kind of be a little bit more full and your plant to grow around it, then put it just to the side of that drainage hole, and then throw a little dirt at the bottom to kind of help secure that. So then, yeah, I'll start the stake at the pot and then add some dirt in there, or excuse me, soil. The greenhouse that I've worked in, greenhouses that I've worked in before, they've always told me that it's not dirt until it hits the floor. Soil is what goes with the plants.
Oh, I love that. I've never heard that before.
And I still catch myself calling soil dirt.
Mm-hmm. Or some people want to call it growing medium, if we get really fancy.
Yes, I'll start referring it to it as medium now.
I don't know if I can ever remember to be that fancy, but it's a good thing to aspire to be.
Right, exactly. the like level up in plant parenthood.
I love it. That's funny. okay, so you put some soil in the bottom of the pot and you put the stake in, and then I guess,
yeah.
What is it for next, medium or plant or what?
Yeah, so then I'll add just a little bit more soil, and then you're basically just potting up your plant regularly.
Okay.
You don't have to worry about like tying the nodes or onto the moss pole or anything yet. So just pot it up as you normally would, and just make sure if it's already kind of starting to trail, you'll want to make sure that you position the plant so that you're not like having to twist it onto the moss pole, if that makes sense.
Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, yeah. So like, for example, I had a plant that definitely needed a moss pole sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of neglected doing so. And so by the time that I had done that, when I was kind of straightening it up into place to kind of like hold onto the moss pole, the nodes were facing actually the opposite direction of where the moss pole was.
So I had to
take the plant out and reposition it, turn it around so the nodes would actually be touching the moss pole instead of facing out.
Okay.
So that's kind of just one trick to look out for while you're planting, so you don't have to replant again.
Okay, cool.
So then kind of just plant it up like you normally would. And depending on how tall your stake is, it might be a little bit wobbly. And if that's the case, I just use those bamboo poles that we started with. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like the base of your moss pole. And I'll just snap a couple so you only have like 6 inches or so. And kind of like use that into the soil and brace that. And I'll tie those stakes.
So to give it like a wider base. Of the center of gravity, I guess, or balance.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of just like bracing the stake up.
That reminds me, I grow tomatoes outside this year, and I was growing this micro dwarf tomato that grew kind of lopsided. And one day I was picking my tomatoes, and I looked at the tomatoes and I saw my boyfriend had taken a bunch of chopsticks and made like a little teepee around the tomato plant to prop it up. And I was like, this is the most like busted but adorable thing he's ever done. Like, it looked insane, but because it was just like jagged broken chopsticks like in a teepee, but it was very sweet.
Right. That's fantastic.
Very thoughtful. But okay, cool. So you can support it if it's a very tall pole. And then so here's what I don't understand. How does it actually climb?
So yeah.
Do we fasten it to the moss pole, or are the roots going to naturally do that first?
Right. So once you have planted it, you'll kind of want to take, I use bind wire. You can also just use that clear nylon that we just worked with. Mm-hmm. Bind wire you can get at most garden centers too. It's just like basically like the garden twist ties.
Yeah, they're like green twist ties.
Yeah, exactly. I find that because I'm kind of terrible at tying knots. Mm-hmm. I find the twist ties super helpful.
Love it.
So you'll have a node wherever the petiole, which is kind of like where the leaf attaches to the stem of your plant.
Okay.
So you'll have those little nodes on there. In most plants, you can kind of see them. They might be really tiny. And once they kind of have that moss pole, you'll see them get really large. Okay. So I'll take those twist ties and kind of just secure it near that moss pole. You don't have to like really crank it in there, but just to make sure that those nodes are going to kind of be awakened by that ambient humidity the moss pole is going to give off.
Okay, perfect. And for the listeners who might not know what a node is, Tyler is going to give me a photo of exactly what we're talking about. So you can go look at the blog for these show notes and take a look.
Yeah, so that's where you're going to want to kind of like secure your plant, the nodes to the moss pole.
And since the growth is going to be coming out of kind of the top of the node, is it important to secure under so you don't kind of impede any of that upward growth?
Yeah, exactly. Because the plant can kind of get like smushed and you'll have a deformed leaf if it's kind of like trying to grow through that bind wire.
So that's what I did with my plants because my plants needed to immediately be attached to the stake. So now, right. Is it true that once my plants get accommodated to the stake that they're going to start popping out aerial roots?
Yeah. So which I think is kind of the most rewarding part about the moss pole is because since the sphagnum is going to stay kind of somewhat moist, mm-hmm. Those aerial roots are actually going to pick up on the humidity given off from the moss pole.
Okay.
And so they'll actually start to grow. Because if you're looking at most of your houseplants that don't have a moss pole, you'll see how the nodes are kind of like brown and they look kind of dried up, right? Mm-hmm. With that moss pole, since it has the extra humidity, they're actually going to continue to grow out towards that humidity. And soon enough, they'll attach themselves actually into the sphagnum. And I have one which is my favorite moss pole that I've made, is for my Monstera Adansonii. Mm-hmm. It's been so rewarding to kind of like watch these little roots trail down the moss pole.
Oh my gosh, you'll have to send a photo of that too, because that's just also personally, I just want to see that photo. That is so exciting to me that we're actually, by creating this moss pole, helping these plants mimic or do what they were intended to do in nature and just don't because of how they've adapted to being houseplants. That is so cool.
Yeah, it's super rewarding to see them kind of pick up on these changes in their environment and react positively to it.
Oh my God, I love it. And then you also brought up another thing because I know on my recent episode with Alessia of Apartment Botanist, we talked about how important humidity is. And I love that you mentioned that the moss poles, because if we can keep them damp, the moss pole is actually going to increase the immediate humidity around it, of the air around it, which happens to have the plant in it. So it's a cool kind of humidity hack as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's really a win-win for all sorts of like houseplant, as far as like the plants are going to benefit from the humidity, but also you're going to get more mature leaves from that as well.
Now, one question I have now that I've had the poles for a few weeks, they do dry out really quickly. So what has been your best method for keeping them moist? Because I'm finding it's hard for me to continually keep them moist enough.
Right, right.
Yeah, this is my favorite word, moist.
Right. I feel like I've been saying that kind of too much this episode. Yeah. I can hear the people cringing as they're listening.
I know. Oopsies. Sorry, guys.
So I guess this is kind of where the crazy plant people in us come out, because I spray my moss poles down once a day, but you can even go as far as like two times a day. And if you don't even want to do that, you can fully saturate them. Whenever I want to just like, I know either I'm going to be away for a bit or I'm just like not really into spraying them. Mm-hmm. I actually just take my watering can, the spout of it, and push it right into the sphagnum pole. Okay. And then I will like slowly pour water, and you can actually, you'll see the water start to trickle down the moss pole. And just by doing that, you're going to actually fully saturate it rather than like ambiently spray it.
That's what I'm going to try doing, because my spritzer is adorable, but it has like a really wide circumference of the spritz that comes out. So I feel like I'm just spraying
my everything.
Entire apartment and not really the moss pole. And
right.
I'll forget to spray it every day. So I'm going to try that technique and I will report back.
Yeah, definitely. I found that works well. And then I've also been known to kind of just take my plants into the shower with the moss pole and let it just go for a couple minutes, because one, then I'm watering the plant, but also fully saturating that moss pole.
Oh, that's a cool idea too. I love that. Okay,
and it's
awesome.
Easy to clean up too.
Yeah, totally. And are there any like other troubleshooting questions you've gotten about the moss poles that we haven't answered yet?
I found before people have said that once the sphagnum kind of like, if it's allowed to dry out completely, that it becomes hydrophobic. Mm-hmm. So where it won't really want to rehydrate again. Mm-hmm. But I've had no issue kind of just spraying them or sticking the spout of my watering can into the moss pole and getting them hydrated again. So as long as we're keeping up with them, and since most of our houseplants are like where we live, we're going to be surrounded and we're going to see them all the time. So I just keep a spray bottle like handy. And whenever I really think about it, I'll just give them a couple spritz to make sure they stay wet.
Like, dude, when you're on the phone, like call your mom, tell her you love her and spritz your plants.
Right. Instead of like pacing around your house, spritz your plants.
That's like when I always end up watering my plants, is when I'm on the phone with my mom or like on the phone with someone catching up. This is amazing. Thank you so much. I really hope that some listeners get encouraged, because I will say the moss poles have made a total difference in my plants. And I also love the way they look, because they really do look natural, you know, they just look like they should be part of the plant. It's really cool.
Yeah, I really enjoy them. And a lot of people, what I think will enjoy is seeing your plants get larger and larger leaves, because a lot of the plants that you buy from either a plant store or like a big box store, they're actually just immature versions of what you would find in their natural habitat, right?
Yeah.
So by letting them kind of grow and giving them a replication of their natural environment, you'll see them get larger and larger leaves, which I'm sure everyone wants.
Of course, especially with some of their amazing aroids that they have.
The monsteras and things like that, you'll see they'll get the fenestrations or like the holes in the leaves. You can actually like help them mature faster by giving them the right conditions.
I love that. And I sure know I'm waiting for my monstera to have fenestrations. I have 10 leaves with no fenestrations yet. So I hope that helps my little guy.
Yeah, you'll get there.
Yay! That's part of the game, patience, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's something we all learned while growing plants.
Totally. So where can we follow your planty journey, you and Tony and your company? Give us all the deets.
I'm definitely a little bit more active on my personal page, which is You Are Local Plant Boy, Your Local Plant Boy. But then also Area Botanicals. My business also has its own Instagram, and I want to start switching that to a little bit more of a informative Instagram.
Awesome.
I'm very excited to show people more about plants.
Oh man, I have total belief that you're going to be a rock star with it because you have been so helpful today. So thank you so much for joining me and giving me all of your planty advice for moss poles.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. I hope people find it helpful.
Thank you, Tyler, for that awesome tutorial. I really hope you try making a moss pole and seeing if that affects your plants and increases your urban jungle vibes in your apartment. It really is a really fun and very easy DIY project. Speaking of, if you're interested in getting the materials that I get, I am now an Amazon influencer, so I have an Amazon influencer, that sounds so ridiculous, but an Amazon influencer storefront where I've put together little collections of products associated with different episodes that I've done. So if you're interested in getting the moss or the pole or the twine that I use to make my moss poles, you can click the link in the show notes, which will take you to my storefront, and then click the mounting epiphytes / DIY moss pole section, and you'll see all the products that I use. And since I'm an Amazon affiliate, a portion of the sale does go to Bloom and Grow Radio, so it's a really fun way to support the show if you feel like getting your DIY on and making yourself a moss pole or making yourself other things associated with different episodes in our show. I've got a lot of fun stuff on that storefront. Before we head out, I want to say thank you again to Modern Sprout for sponsoring this episode. Make sure to head over to modernsprout.com, type in the code BLOOM at checkout to get 15% off. And with these garden jars, I love how many different styles they have. So depending on whatever your style aesthetic for your apartment is, they really do have a garden jar that's going to fit in. Another cool kit on their website that looks really interesting is their waxed planter kits. You can grow things like forget-me-nots or poppy, poinsettias, or lavender. But the kit that really caught my eye was their spruce tree kit. I think this would be really fun to grow if you have kids or maybe a niece or nephew or kid in your life that you want to buy it for. You grow a spruce tree. It takes 10 to 20 days to sprout, and then the tree will grow in the kit over the course of several years. How fun is that? Like for the holiday season, that would make a great gift. So anyway, whatever your interests might be, whether it's growing their organic non-GMO herbs or spruce or lavender or maybe getting one of their grow lights, visit modernsprout.com and use the code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off. You gotta love a discount. All right, friends, until next week, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review. I would greatly appreciate it. If you want to join the Bloom and Grow Garden Club, head over to bloomandgrowradio.com/garden-club to join the planty fun. When you join, you get a free download of the Keep Blooming print that Molly Mansfield made exclusively for us, and you will also get an email with the password to the private Facebook group, which is what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is pretty amazing. For behind-the-scenes scoop, plant tips I learn along the way, and sneak peeks of future episodes, follow me on Instagram at Bloom and Grow Radio. And plant friends, I'm here for you. So drop me a line if you have an idea for an episode, live event, or maybe if you're a planty business looking to sponsor the show. I am always here to help you keep blooming and keep growing. Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, Plant Friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up, so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya, and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.